So I read in an article this week titled, South Koreans Lock Themselves Up to Escape Prison of Daily Life. And the article goes on to talk about how stressful life is in Korea with the heavy workload, the heavy hours. And so one person came up with an idea to start a business where they would create a prison. Not for people to be put in against their will, but actually for people to want to go to. In fact, they pay about $90 for 24 hours in the prison. And they're put in a solitary cell that's about 54 square feet. And there's no mobile phones allowed, no clocks, and no talking allowed. They're given a blue prison uniform, a yoga mat, a tea set, a pen, and a notebook, and that's all. And they can sleep on the floor, and there's a small toilet inside their cell, but no mirror. Now, here's the reality. That is in Korea, but how many of you, as you heard me talk about that, were like, that actually doesn't sound too bad, right? I could take 24 hours of just nothing. Here, right over there, we're going to start one. No, that'd be cool, though. Many of us here, not just in Korea, but many of us here in the United States are tired. We're stressed out. We're highly anxious, you know, high anxiety, and we're too busy. And so what can we do about that? As we live in a busy, busy world, and today we're going to be beginning a series called Peace Within. For the next 3 weeks, we're going to talk about that in Christ, you can have peace within, even if your world on the outside is busy. So today we're going to begin laying the foundation for these 3 weeks. And the big idea of our passage today is that spiritual peace is only found in Jesus Christ. Spiritual peace is only found in Jesus Christ. Now, this is important. In the next couple of weeks, we're going to talk about finding peace in the midst of anxiety or worry, you know, that what I'd call that physical peace. But that won't mean much unless we first have found and first establish what the most important peace is, and that is the spiritual peace. And so let's go ahead and begin looking at our passage today. I'll read it through. Come to me, Jesus says, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. So I'm going to break this into four different sections. What I call, first of all, in verse 28, the invitation. And then also in verse 28 is those invited. And then next we're going to see the instructions given. And then very lastly, we're going to see the fine print. But just to keep us on our toes a little bit, and I felt that this flow worked a little bit better, we're going to go in reverse order. So we're going to start with the fine print. We're going to turn it around and work our way backwards from there. So we're going to first look at the fine print in verses 29 and 30. Now, if any of you have seen those commercials, on TV, you're in the middle of watching your favorite show, and then one of those medication commercials comes on. You know, like Restasis. Do you have dry eyes? Choose or ask your doctor about Restasis. And then, you know, after 30 seconds of the commercial, they then spend another 30 seconds of the side effects, you know, the fine print. You know, Restasis. Common side effects are loss of vision, stroke, death. Your eyes may spontaneously combust and flames will shoot out of your eyes. And remember to call your doctor if you look down and one of your eyeballs falls out. Restasis. That's the fine print right there. And it makes you wonder as you go through that. It's like, I don't know. Do I really want to get rid of dry eyes and then die? You know, are the side effects, the fine print, does that make it worth what the offer is? Well, here we are looking at the fine print of what Jesus is offering. And let's see if what the fine print says, if it's even worth it. Is it even worth it? So he begins by saying in the second part of verse 29, he says, "For I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Now, wait a second. That's the fine print right there. That's the fine print. You know, no strokes, no death, no flame coming out of the eyes, just benefits, just good things happening, no scary things at all. You know, think about it. If you saw a commercial like this, your ears and your eyes would perk up there when you heard this. Like, ask about Restasis. Common side effects involve improved vision, loss of tummy fat, smoother skin, and improved personality. I'd be like, sign me up, sign me up. And that's what Jesus is doing here. He's saying, come to me. And no, there's not these hard things, these bad things that are going to happen to you. These are good things that are going to happen to you. He gives two benefits. First of all, he says that I am gentle and lowly. It's another word for humble. I'm gentle and humble in heart. Jesus is saying that he's not a taskmaster. He's not uncaring. He's not full of himself. He is a good leader to come to. He is a good leader to follow. My wife and I occasionally talk about different pastors that we've had throughout the years, either at churches we've attended or just at churches that I've interviewed at throughout the years. And we always end up noting the ones that we really like, because usually they're very humble. And the ones that we like less are usually the ones that are a little bit full of themselves. Yes, yes, I know. Even pastors can get full of themselves. And we're like, I don't know about that, guys. I'm interviewing at a church, and you saw him, and he's like, well, look at me, because I'm so great. I don't know. But Jesus is not like that. Jesus is gentle. And he is humble at heart. Not only that, he says that you will find rest for your souls. Rest for your souls. Earlier this week, I posted on Facebook asking you all the ideal restful day. Now, I didn't get very many responses, so shame on you all. But the responses I did get, there's a few like this. One person said their ideal restful day was being in their house in winter, watching an old movie. That sounds nice, doesn't it? That sounds very relaxing. I would add, you know, maybe with the fireplace on, cup of hot cocoa, and all my kids outside shoveling the snow. Sounds nice, doesn't it? Very restful. Someone else said a day at the beach. A day at the beach. I like that person. It was my wife that wrote that. So I really like that person there. But so those are nice days. You can't go wrong with a day at the beach. But there's a problem with even restful days like that. It's that they don't last. You can have a restful moment, a restful day. But then you come back and everything's not so restful anymore. It's only restful for a little bit. But Jesus is saying that in him, you won't just find a little bit of rest. You will find eternal rest. You will find rest, not just for your head. You will find rest for your soul. That's what he's offering. Now, what kind of rest, though, is he talking about there? You know, when we say rest in peace, may he rest in peace. Is that, you know, are we talking about when we die? Rest in peace. No. To understand what he's talking about, when he says rest, we need to go to Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews chapter 4. You can look at that whole chapter. I'm just going to point out just a couple of the main verses here in verses 9 through 11. So the author of Hebrews says, "So then there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works as God did from his. And let us therefore strive to enter that rest so that no one may fall by the same sword of disobedience. So what is he talking about here? The author of Hebrews is really talking in that whole chapter about two different types of rest. He first of all starts talking about how the Israelites, they left Egypt and they were in the desert and they were hot and stinky and tired and they just wanted their own home. And so they were headed towards the promised land. And that promised land was their place of rest. It was a place that once they got to, the busyness of life wouldn't go away, but they would be home. They would be happy. They wouldn't have to be walking through, you know, the hot desert anymore. But what happened to the Israelites? They disobeyed God. And because they disobeyed God, they ended up wandering around the desert for 40 more years before they could enter into that rest. But as we talked about months ago, that whole idea of entering into the promised land was really a picture of the bigger idea of Christians who are headed towards the promised land of heaven. And when we get there, we will enter our rest. We will have our rest. When in verse 10, it says, for whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works as God did from his. As God did from his. Now, why did God need to rest? This is talking about creation. You know, he creates on day 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And when he gets to day 7, he just sits down on the couch and plops down and rests. No, that's not saying he's sitting and resting. It's saying that he stopped working because there was no more work to do. What he had done was fulfilled. What he had done was finished. And so Jesus is calling all of us to enter into his Sabbath rest. And Sabbath rest does not refer to resting just on a Sunday, but resting from striving to get to heaven. You catch me there? When we are called to work as Christians, it's not like we just have a Sunday to rest. It's a rest from striving. It's a rest from trying to do what we need to do to be made right before God. Because thanks to what Jesus Christ did on the cross, when we come to him, we can have rest. Rest. Now, do you want that rest? Does that sound like something that you want? Well, we've read the fine print now, so let's continue our way backwards and look at the instructions to see how we can get that rest. He says in the instructions, take my yoke upon you and learn from me. And learn from me. That yoke there refers to this big wooden frame. I have a picture of it here. It's a big wooden frame that joins two animals together to pull a heavy load. Now, at first glance, though, the idea of a yoke does not sound very appealing to us, does it? I know to me, I was thinking, take my yoke upon you. I don't want to be yoked up with anyone. But we must see that Jesus is not calling us to say, leave your freedom and come get yoked with me. That is not what he's saying there. What he's saying is that he says, leave the yoke you're in and come and join my yoke instead. You see, we are all yoked to something. All of us. Whether we follow Jesus or not, we are all yoked to something. And so Jesus is inviting you to join the better yoke, the better yoke. Now, you probably already know this, but when you join together with something to maybe carry or to push a heavy load, when you are sharing that, usually it's the stronger person who ends up doing more of the work. For example, earlier this week, I bought this really big basket that goes on the back of a van. You can sort of see it there. It was nighttime. But it attaches to the hitch, and it's this big metal basket. It was pretty heavy. And so I assembled it in the house, and then I carried it out to the back of the van. And my younger two kids, ages 3 and 5, helped me carry it. Now, in a sense, as we were carrying it out, the three of us were yoked together because all three of us were sharing in the work together. But the reality is, who was doing most of the work? My three-year-old, you know, Grace, come on, hurry up, come on, faster, faster. No, I was doing the work while they were just sort of helping. And that's fine, that's fine. I wasn't expecting them to do the heavy lifting. I was fine doing it. And likewise, when you yoke to Jesus, he's not asking you to do heavy work. He is asking you to simply join him as he does the work. He's not asking you to toil and to strive and to get worn out. He's asking you to join him as he's the one that has strived forward. Now, does that mean you sit back and be lazy? No, no. But you are not the one that's doing the hard part. In fact, what are you called to do? He says in verse 29, he says, learn from me. He says, learn from me. He doesn't say work hard. He doesn't say do this, do that. He says, learn from me. I love that. I love that picture where it's like he's just saying simply, just come. Just come to me and sit with me and study about me and make me your focus. Don't do all these things and don't get all burdened down by trying to be the perfect person. No, just come and learn from me. How many of you can do that? Just this week, you just take some time every day. Open up the Word. Don't worry about the time. Don't worry about, you know, the check that, yeah, I've done this. Don't get burdened down by all the other stuff you could do. Just take some moments to learn from Jesus. Learn from him. Perhaps today, you need to stop trying to earn things from God. Or do things for God. And just learn from him. Just sit at his feet. And just have that intimacy with our Lord. Well, that's the instructions. Let's continue our way backwards and see those invited. Those invited. So, have any of you been on Facebook? Or, you know, you don't have to be on Facebook to know this. But, you know, you're strolling through. And you see one of your friends had this really nice party, and you're like, oh, that looks like fun. I'm glad they had a fun time. And then it occurs to you, wait a second, I wasn't invited to that party. Happens to me more than you know, more than you know. But thankfully, the invitation that we're given here, that we'll look at in a minute, the invitation to the people is for everyone. It's not just for the good people. It's not just for if you do this. Jesus' invitation is to all. To all. Listen to this. He says, come to me, all. Now he specifies who that all is. All who labor and are heavy laden. Labor and are heavy laden. That word labor there literally means to toil. Or to work with effort. It's, you know, working so hard that it just wears you out. And then the word heavy laden could mean, another word for it would be just having a heavy burden or a heavy load. It's those feelings that you have, like when something's just, not physically, but just internally weighing you down inside. And I've already said that I'm not talking about physical work. We'll be talking about that in the next few weeks. I'm not talking about physical or mental anxiety. We're talking about the load of the spiritually labored or the spiritually burdened. Now, how do you get spiritually burdened or spiritually labored? How do you get like that? Jesus talks in Matthew, throughout Matthew, about the Pharisees, and he speaks out against the Pharisees all the time. And he calls out against them because the Pharisees were imposing laws on people in order for them to be righteous. They would say something like, you know, along the lines of, do this, follow these rules, the Pharisees would say, and then you'll be righteous. But what was the actual result that when you did all these things, were you actually righteous? Were you actually then feeling like you were at peace with God? No, you usually ended up feeling more toiled or more weighed down and more exhausted. All that trying was wearing people down. All that trying was wearing people out. That's why Jesus said in Matthew chapter 23, he said, of the Pharisees, he said, they, the Pharisees, tie up heavy burdens, hard to bear, and they lay them on people's shoulders. That's what it means that when you're heavy laden and when you're burdened, when you're trying to do things on your own to have that spiritual peace with God, the only thing, the only result is that you end up just putting more burden on yourself. You exhaust yourself even more. I don't know about you, but many of us, I know I can identify with that. Even Christians fall into this trap. You know, we say and we think salvation comes from God and from Jesus Christ alone. But then how do we act? You know, we go and sin and we're like, all right, God, I'm going to do better next time. I'm going to do this for you. I'm going to act better so that I'm in good standing with you. You know, we may not say those words, but how often do we act like that? See, our actions often end up showing that we're like the Pharisees, that we're like that, where we want to act a certain way in order to be righteous. If you come from a Catholic background, then this is probably a struggle for you because you grew up thinking that good works were the way to go. That good works were the way were one of the ways that you would be right before God. And Jesus would say, no, no, it's good to do good works, but only right standing comes from Jesus. If you come from a church that has a very legalistic point of view, very legalistic, like lots of rules to follow, you know, clothing a certain way, hair the certain way, all these different things, then you probably grew up thinking, you may have not said it, but you grew up thinking that I need to act a certain way in order to be right for God. But Christ does not want us to feel that way. He wants us to find freedom in him. And so he is calling us to say that if you feel burden, that if you feel that weight on your shoulders, to come to him, he says. Which leads us to our last part here, to the invitation. The invitation where he says, come to me. Come to me. Now, throughout the week, early in the morning, I teach English to kids in China. And so after we read something, here I am, aren't I cute? So after we read a paragraph, usually what ends up happening is I'll then have to ask them some questions to assess their understanding of it. Because we don't want them just to read the words and know how to say the words. We want them to understand the words as well. So as I put my sermon together, that was fresh in my mind. So I want to ask you two questions. Are you okay with that? I want to assess your understanding of this passage. So here's question one. What are people called to do? What are people called to do when Jesus says, come to me? Well, if you answered come, then you are correct. You are correct. Yeah, this is not a trick question. But the question two is, where are people called to go? Where are people called to go? And the answer is to Jesus. He says, come to me. Now that's simple, right? It's pretty straightforward. Yet, how often do we get this wrong? How often do we do this part incorrectly? Let me show you. So often, some people come, but they come to the wrong person. They come to the wrong thing. You see, all of us have issues, anxiety, stress, burdens in our life that weigh on us and cause us to want to go to something. And some of us take healthy measures. We go to, say, friends. When we're feeling burdened, physical burdens, we're feeling mental burdens, we go to friends and try to talk it out. We try to get encouragement from them. Or maybe we go and exercise. We're feeling down, we go and exercise, and we hopefully that'll make us feel better. Or we go to church. We go to church and think that, yes, coming to church will help me feel better. Now, all of these are good, and all of these are healthy, but none of these are the ultimate answer. But some of us also take unhealthy actions. When we feel those burdens, when we feel those stresses, we turn to things like addictions to lessen or to distract us or to reduce the issues in our life or the burdens in our life or the anxiety in our life. And that's how people get addicted to things like to drugs, to alcohol, to pornography, to gambling, to shopping, whatever it may be. It's so often just to distract us from the pain that's in our life. Now, these are what I'd call unhealthy ways to deal with the burdens in our life. And these two are not the answer. But Jesus said, don't go to church. Don't go to alcohol. He says, come to me. Come to me. He didn't say, come to religion. He didn't say, come and act better. He said, come to me. Come to me. You see, there is a difference between encountering religion and encountering Jesus. There's a difference. Jesus is calling you to encounter him. He wants you to encounter him, not just religion. Religion are those those outward practices of what is hopefully on the inside. You can be part of religion and completely miss Jesus. You could. And so while religion is not bad, I'm not downing religion here. When you follow Jesus, you have religion. But the other way is not always true. You can have some form of religion and not be following Jesus, not encounter Jesus. And the danger here is that we all mix this up. Is that we think that we will just go to church and feel better. I heard another pastor say this, so I'm stealing it from him. And he talked about how, have you ever heard someone say, yeah, I was going through this hard time in my life, and so I decided to give church a chance. And it wasn't for me. It wasn't for me. The reason why it wasn't for you, it's because you encountered church, but you didn't encounter Jesus. It's a big difference. See, we are not Christians for the sake of just going to church. We do not gather together and sing just for the sake of singing. We gather together and we sing because we want to glorify and honor the one who saved us. So we are gathered together to worship Jesus. Jesus is the point of this, not just religious practices. Have you ever heard about, you know, the kids that attend church all their childhood, and then the moment they hit college, or, you know, once they hit 18, go off on their own, they disappear from church? Why is that? Because they encountered church all their life, but they didn't encounter Jesus. When you encounter Jesus, your life will be changed. When you encounter church, maybe, hopefully, you'll be pointed to an encounter with Jesus, but it's not guaranteed. See, here's the reality. You can make sure, parents, that your kids are perfectly behaved growing up. You can make sure that your kids avoid R-rated movies and they go to Awanas every week. You can make sure that they court instead of date. You can even send them to Christian school and not have a TV in your house. But none of that will mean anything unless they've had an encounter with Jesus Christ. And the same is true for adults as well. You can do all of these outward practices, but unless you have an encounter with Jesus Christ, then your life will not be changed. And I want to say this as a warning to all of us today. You are here in church and you're hearing about Jesus, but have you encountered Jesus Christ? That's the question. It begins simply with believing that he is Lord and receiving him into your life. But that receiving part is not just something that I can make you do. That receiving part is what you do to have him come into your life. You're saying, Lord, I want to follow you. But again, it's not just the words. It's not even just the thoughts. It's that having him come. It's that encounter with him. It's when Saul in Acts chapter 9 that I read earlier, when he encountered Jesus, and when he saw that Jesus was real, he was like, whoa, I have been totally backwards in all this. I've been persecuting the one who is actually the true God. So he turned his life around, and from that point forward, he was unstoppable. My prayer is that our church will be like that as well. That every one of us would have an encounter with Jesus. And that we as a church would not just be known for having nice music, or would not be known just for having good kids programs, but that we would be a church that's known for one for people that have encountered Jesus Christ. I'm going to close with this story here about John Newton. John Newton wrote Amazing Grace. We all know that song, that hymn. And the story goes about how he had, when he was raised, when he was a child, he was told about Jesus Christ. But then his parents died, and he went off to live with some other people. And then eventually, as he became an adult, went off and into the Navy or to the something out at sea. And he strayed far, far away from Christ. And he became a foul-mouthed slave ship captain. Nothing to do with Jesus Christ. But then, one time, he read this book about Christ. And somehow, some way, it got to him. And in that moment, he had an encounter with Jesus. And his life changed. And from that point forward, he went from being foul-mouthed and slave ship captain to being a person that could not be stopped telling people about Christ. And he became a minister and a writer of a lot of amazing hymns as well. And I read a story this week about how when he was past retirement age, he kept on wanting to preach. He kept on preaching until he was super old. And he could barely see, and he could barely speak as well. He would just speak in whispers. And he was, fragile enough that he had to have an assistant follow him around when he would go up onto the pulpit and preach. Maybe someday someone else will be right here, me. But one sermon, he proclaimed these words. He said, Jesus Christ is precious. And then he repeated them again. Jesus Christ is precious. The assistant, being helpful, whispered to him. He said, you said that twice. And John Newton responded, yes, I've said it twice. And I'm going to say it again. And then he shouted, Jesus Christ is precious. John Newton had an encounter with Jesus, so much so that even going into his old age, he could proclaim and couldn't stop proclaiming that Jesus Christ is precious. Can you say the same? If not, you know, maybe you've turned to him before, maybe you've had an encounter with him before, but you've strayed away. Well, as we go into a time of singing in just a few minutes, take this time now to turn back to him, to repent of your sins, and say, God, I want to have a deeper encounter with you. I want you to change my life. Maybe you've never turned to him before, and today could be your day where you turn out, where you cry out to God and say, God, I need you. I want to get to the point where I can say, you're precious. May I follow you today. Let's pray.